Kevin and Bean.
Yes.
K-R-O-Q. Hi, Matt Brown.
Hey, Bean.
Matt is a Kevin and Bean listener who listens to us, what? Do you listen to the podcast or you stream us online from your home there in Austin, Texas?
I listen to the podcast.
God bless you. Thanks so much. You contacted us. You reached out to us a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, I got something you guys might be interested in. Ask an interventionist. That's what you do? You're an interventionist for a living?
That's what I do, yeah.
Fantastic. I don't think we've covered this topic much. Tell people who don't know the word what that means.
Basically, what I do is I work with families primarily of addicts and alcoholics who are resistant to the idea of getting help. People who need it but aren't necessarily willing on their own to say, you know what, this is what I need. And so the families will contact me, or the treatment centers that they're working with will contact me to bring me in to help organize an intervention, to really provide an experience for the addict or the alcoholic, whoever we're working with, to create some motivation.
So in other words, if I've got a family member who's clearly hurting themselves with all the drugs and alcohol, and maybe it's slipped away and they don't realize how bad the problem is, they may not take the advice from me, hey, you've really got to get some professional help. Sometimes they need a stranger to come in and kind of say the same thing, and that has more impact?
Well, it does, because most of the time, families have been saying this for a while. They've been saying it, and there hasn't been a lot of follow-through. The family's losing credibility because, I mean, just even in my own life, I'm in recovery myself, and my family had to do this for me 11 years ago, and they've been telling me for a while before this that I needed some help, and I just was completely shut off to the idea because I didn't think I had to.
And when you say I didn't need, I have to, the thing that happened to you is what's happening to millions of other people. They think, oh, I've got this handled. Oh, the problem's not as serious as you're making it sound. Oh, I can stop whenever I want. Is that what they're thinking?
Those are some of the excuses that I used and other people use, absolutely.
Tell me what it's like for you. I mean, you're walking into a situation that is emotionally charged, right, where everybody is on edge. Is part of your job is just to play the peacemaker to make sure that a fight doesn't break out between the people who have the advice and the people who don't want the advice?
Sometimes. Most of the time, I mean, what I'm doing ahead of time is I'm preparing the family for what's going to happen on the day of the intervention. And obviously the goal is to get that person to agree to get whatever level of care the family wants to see them pursue. And by the time we get to the point where we've got the person in the room and we're doing the intervention, it's not so much about keeping a fight from breaking out. It's really about controlling the communication that's going on in the room, making sure that it's a level playing field, making sure that the messages are being sent and received in a way that really is most optimal for the person to hear what's being said.
Do you assign one family member to block the door? How does that work?
I have. It doesn't have to happen all the time. Most of the time, it's not that way necessarily. But I have done that in the past, absolutely.
Because I can imagine a lot of people would want to just leave.
They do.
Because they feel like it's an ambush, right?
Yeah,
they
say, hey, I don't need
to be here. I don't want to. It is voluntary. It's not like you're there with the police to cuff them and take them away, right?
No, but usually we try to assemble a team of people, whether it's family, close friends, where they're going to have the respect of the individual that we're intervening on, where at least they can show them the love and respect of, you know, let's just sit down and hear what the people in this room have to say. And at the end of this conversation, you can decide what you're going to do. You're an adult. We're not here to force you to do anything, but certainly we want you to hear what these people who love you want to say to you.
This is the voice of Matt Brown here on the Kevin and Bean Show. He is with a company called Freedom Interventions, which works nationwide to provide people like you, Matt, to help people go through the intervention process. We'll give out that number at the end of the interview. But for right now, if you want to talk to Matt, if you have a question you want to ask about interventions, about anything having to do with this topic, at 1-800-520-1067. 1-800-520-1067. Your chance to ask an interventionist. Tell me a little bit about your history. You said you are a recovering addict. What was your story, Matt?
Well, I actually used to live here in Los Angeles, and my addiction really hit its high point when I was here in L.A. I was working...
Because we've got the best drugs, man!
You're not kidding. I was working in the entertainment business, and, you know, just slowly began to compromise the values. And I'm not here to say that drugs are bad or alcohol is bad. They're just bad for people like me who can't control it. And so it got to the point where I just couldn't control it anymore. I lost my job.
What was your drug of choice?
Cocaine, mostly. Mm-hmm. Alcohol, for sure. Pretty much anything you put in front of me. But if you put it all out on a table, that's really what I would choose.
Right. And when you say you were losing control, was it that you were spending too much time and too much money trying to chase that high all the time?
That's part of it. You know, the consequences were beginning to add up. And in spite of the consequences, I just continued my decline. I couldn't stop myself.
What is it you think that got you clean? Did you have a rock bottom moment, or did you start the process of fighting back before then because of an intervention?
Well, what happened was my I grew up in Arizona, and my parents came from Arizona knowing that I was about to hit my bottom here. You know, and most families are like this. There's some degree of enabling that goes on in every family. So instead of letting me hit my bottom, my family actually drove out from Arizona, picked me up here in L.A., drove me back to Arizona on the condition that I would stop using and drinking. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I thought this was a great opportunity to start over. I was gonna stay clean. I was gonna stop.
New environment, new friends, and you've got support of family and friends around you. They're gonna keep a close eye on you. You thought that's what you needed.
Absolutely. And within a week after I got back to Arizona, my parents woke me up one morning. They had a couple of suitcases in hand, and they said, "Son, we love you, but we're not doing this anymore." My mom said to me, "I'm not gonna be a prisoner in my own home for one more day." And that was the thing that kind of hit me. Like, at first, I thought she was being dramatic, but looking back, I mean, I was holding my family hostage.
Let me ask you something. You were living in L.A. They would have had a sense of what you were doing, but they wouldn't really know what was going on. What?
I had a couple of really good friends that I had gone to high school with in Arizona who were living in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And without me really realizing it, they were talking to my family.
Oh, okay. And so they gave them the full picture.
They did.
Interesting.
Okay. And you know, while I was angry about it at the time, those guys saved my life.
Because for a lot of families, you would suspect, but you don't really know. So, and
you
how
know how
do you
bad
act
it is sometimes.
If you
yeah.
don't really know what's going on?
They knew there was a problem. They certainly didn't know the degree to which it was growing and how big it had gotten.
Do most addicts, Matt, and maybe it's part of the effect of the drugs and alcohol, think I'm okay? Do they talk themselves into thinking I can handle this? It's not too far gone. I don't need help. Is that part of what keeps them going?
It is, because we surround ourselves with people who feed that belief system. We surround ourselves with people who send that message to us. And, you know, of course, if we're around healthy people, they're going to call us out on it. But, you know, as we decline into an addiction, we're going to surround ourselves with like-minded people.
Right.
Right. What a fascinating topic. What a fascinating business. I want to find out more about it when we come back. Freedom Interventions is the name of the company. Matt Brown is in studio with us. He is the owner and founder of the company and a Kevin and Bean fan who offered to come in. And we're so grateful he did for Ask an Interventionist. 1-800-520-1067. Your calls and a brand new Omar theme song that I can't wait to hear coming up right after this on K-Rock.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show.
It smells like butt hair.
K-Rock. We're taking your calls right now if you have a question about interventions at 1-800-520-1067. Hit it, Steve.
You could be addicted to a certain kind of substance. An interventionist steps in before it's the end. So we'll ask an interventionist, will you help us with our friend Kevin?
Oh, wait a minute.
Because we really think it's time to get him sober.
I don't know, that's a toss-up.
We're gonna have to cut him off.
K-R-O-K-O-K.
Always having a problem talking, and now we have to show him love. We'll ask an interventionist, and he'll be tough.
What did you do?
Ask an interventionist, we want to know.
Are you here to protect us? Not hot. And how often has we used it?
Ask an interventionist, we want to know.
I need to do the Dave plan next time.
What?
I need to do the Dave plan next time. I'm not drunk.
How sad that Kevin's not here for Ask an Intervention. You were hoping to be able to walk out of the studio with Kevin, weren't you, Matt?
That is rather conspicuous that he's not here for his own intervention.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I think that's why you contacted us. You realized we needed help on this show. All right. Let's get in as many calls as we can here with our guest. How about Stephanie to get us going? Stephanie was kind enough to call on line 6 and hold on to Ask an Interventionist. You're on with Matt. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Matt.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Lisa May.
Hi there.
Thank you, Kevin and Bean. I'm calling because my question is regarding a functioning addict. If you have a partner who doesn't think they have a problem, who holds down a job, who has a few friends, you know, how do you approach it? Do you stay close? Do you let go?
Well, to describe someone as a functioning addict, It's a difficult thing to try to decipher sometimes. Most of the time when somebody is in an addiction, they've surrounded themselves by people who are going to help facilitate this.
Right. I mean, I feel like, am I helping? Am I hurting? Am I...
And she's in a tough spot, as a lot of people are too, Matt, because he honestly may not think he has a problem. She honestly may think he does have a problem.
But
what do you do? What do you do with that when you guys are at different points of agreeing how bad the situation is?
Well, when you're in Stephanie's position, you really have to ask yourself, do I want to continue living like this?
Yeah, I'm in therapy, I see a counselor, I'm working on my best self. She says I'm making the addiction my addiction now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's your advice for Stephanie?
My advice would be for you to surround yourself. There are organizations out there like Al-Anon, Families Anonymous, where you can go and find people who are in the same situation that you're in.
Right.
And find a common solution. Your problem isn't necessarily your husband. It's the addiction. And Al-Anon or Families Anonymous or other organizations like that will help you engage in a program for yourself, not necessarily to change him, but to give you some tools to better manage your emotions, your decision-making process, so that you're not contributing to this.
Right.
And you'll come to the solution on your own through those types of programs.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'm glad you called. Yeah. We're going to take some other calls. Let's go on to Ellie now. Ellie is on line 4. She's got a question as we ask an interventionist. Go ahead, Elle.
Hi. My question's about my dad. He's an alcoholic and has been my whole life. And about 3 years ago, I wrote him a letter saying I love him, but I have to talk to him when he's sober because it's just too much for me. And now I have a lot of dreams about him, and I always think about him, and I always wonder if I did the right thing.
So, in other words, you cut off contact with him. You don't talk to him anymore because he's a drunk.
Yeah. I mean, he has my phone number, and I said, just please contact me when you're sober, and we can start over. It was a very supportive letter. And
what do you think of that approach, Matt?
Well, I think that if you look, talking about enabling, If you take away the enabling from an addiction, it's like taking away oxygen from a fire. Eventually, the fire's going to go out. And I'm not here to advocate for disintegrating families at all. But at some point, when a family member is being affected to a degree that they're just not comfortable with anymore, and the person's not willing to engage in some sort of recovery program, the healthy person in this relationship at some point has to say, you know what, I'm going to have to give them the freedom to make their choices and live with the consequences of those choices. But I've got to continue and move on with my life. And so for Ellie to be able to do this with her dad and leave the door open that should he engage in sobriety at some point in the future, she'd love to have that relationship with him. It doesn't sound like it's a permanent thing. She just wants to do it on healthy terms.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you for the call, Ellie. We appreciate it so much. Let's go to Mary real quick. Mary's going to broaden the scope of what constitutes an addiction. She's on line 3. Hi, Mary. You're on with Matt Brown. Go ahead.
Hi, guys, Lisa May. I have a quick question for Matt. My husband is very addicted to gambling, but it's also fused by alcoholism. So I don't know when the two combine, it's just driving the family nuts. We're married, we have children, and he surrounds himself with a bunch of people just like him. So it's kind of hard, even if we were to have an intervention, because I don't think he respects anybody at this point.
Mm. Okay. Wow. Tough situation. So, is your what's your specific question, though?
Would we treat the gambling, or would it be the alcoholism, or would it be both?
It would really be both, because whether it's alcoholism, gambling, drug addiction, workaholism, exercise compulsion, whatever it is, it's just a vehicle. For an addict, reality is a very painful place to exist. And so we choose whatever avenue, whatever vehicle we can use to exit reality in. And some people choose gambling, some people choose sex, some people choose drugs. It's just that. It's just the vehicle. And so when you look at it from that point of view, it's not so much about what the compulsive behavior is. It's about what are they trying to cover up by engaging in those behaviors.
And the toughest thing about interventions, I would imagine, Matt, that you probably hear from families all the time, because I know you offer follow-up care in the months after the intervention also, is that they find it difficult to shut out all of their former friends that were enablers, right? That they to walk away from the circle of the people you think you're closest to must be incredibly difficult for people.
It is. But there are times where it just absolutely has to happen. We have to cut ties with those people that are going to drag us down and keep us sick. And
let's go to thank you very much for the call, Mary. Let's go to Jason on line 5. Jason has a great question, and he is on with Matt. It's time to ask an interventionist.
Hi. Okay. guys, Lisa May.
Hi.
I have an aunt, and she's an alcoholic, and it's pretty bad. I mean, it's gotten to the point where, like, she's kind of just lost all sorts of shame for the sorts of things you do when you're drunk. She's, you know, she's made a mess of herself in public, you know, and it's just, it doesn't bother her anymore. And it's getting to the point where she's going to become homeless. Right? She's losing all of her money. She's wasting it all.
She's just completely given up and just accepted that whatever bad things happen as a result of the drugs or alcohol, she's fine with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you do anything with it?
Yeah, can you do anything with someone who's given up, Matt? That's a great question.
Absolutely. And I think when it gets to the point where an intervention is necessary, most of the time that's the case. We were talking during the break about how a lot of us get to that point where we're just so beaten down. We can't fathom the idea that things are ever going to get better. And the idea of an intervention, when people think of an intervention, a lot of times they think of tough love. And they emphasize the tough, but not the love part. And one of the things that I really try to do when I go in and do an intervention with the family is inspire hope in the individual that we're working with. I want them absolutely to know that everyone in that room, including me, cares about them and cares about what happens to them as a result of what we're doing. And sometimes that's enough when they're surrounded by a group of people who absolutely love them. They're not willing necessarily to continue living the way that they've been living, but they love that person and they want to see something better for them. And sometimes that's enough to inspire that person to make a better choice.
Are you mostly successful with your interventions in terms of those people getting clean and staying clean? Or is there just by nature of the work that you do a pretty high failure rate?
Well, about 90% of the cases that I work on, when you talk about just getting someone into treatment on the day of the intervention, about 90% of the cases that I work on will go to treatment on the day of the intervention. When that remaining 10%, you're looking at really two reasons why they don't go. Number one, they don't believe that the family actually is going to follow through with any of the changes in their behavior that they've committed to during the intervention. You know, a lot like my family, they threaten really severe consequences, but if I made life uncomfortable enough for them, they would back down from the boundaries, the consequences, whatever you want to call it, and I would get my way eventually. And I think a lot of families find themselves in that position where they want things to change, but they can't maintain those boundaries without some help. The other part of that 10% are people who just are not ready to stop yet. Their relationship with whatever their drug of choice is stronger than the relationships that they find with their family, friends, and they want to just continue to use.
Name of the business is Freedom Interventions. What's the easiest way to get in touch with you if our listeners want more information?
The website is freedominterventions.com, and the telephone number is 888-762-7557.
Matt, and we have that for you here at K-Rock, too, if you didn't get it. But freediminterventions.com, easiest thing to remember. Matt, I know you've been a fan of the show for a long time. We appreciate that. Appreciate you reaching out to us. Now that you've been here, are you crushingly disappointed with the experience of being on the show with us, and will you no longer listen?
I'll continue to listen, but I am going to be taking beer mug to rehab.
Okay.
Fantastic. Thanks
Come
for coming
on.
By.
Ask an interventionist, we want to know.
This is the Kevin and Bean Show.
It's like being around a black hole that just sucks the life out of everything.
KROQ.